I'm talking about not allowing anybody to tell you who you are, what you stand for, what you will do, what dreams you should go after. I'm talking about standing firmly on your two feet and say, this is what I am going to do. And even if it does not work out the way you originally imagined it, you cannot tell me you didn't learn something. You cannot tell me you didn't grow, and you cannot tell me you didn't soar at some point.
Welcome to Living as You. I'm Patrick Quinn, a brain enthusiast, mental health advocate, and aspiring medical professional. And I'm here today to break down the stories behind the curtain, the moments of inspiration, the defining moments of our lives, and the shaping influences that have led inspiring leaders to live a life authentically to themselves. Our conversation this week is with speaker, teacher, and author Jen Drakes. Coming from the beautiful nature of Ontario, Canada, Jen began her life journey in the Caribbean, where she lived the first years of her life with her grandmother. After her mom courageously made the immigration journey to Canada, Jen moved north, where she would go on to get a degree in computer science from Dawson College and business administration from York University. Over the course of her career, Jen has touched lives as a life mentor, poet, talk show host, and podcaster. Author of the recently released Aladdin Carpets and founder of the podcast One Life Fully Lived, Jen continues to use her voice and writing to make an impact on today's world, especially young adults. On a mission to improve how people feel about themselves, Jen is incredibly passionate about helping people unlock their full inner power. With that, let's get to today's podcast conversation with Jen Drakes. Jen, how are you?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear. How are we doing?
I'm good. Finally.
We are here. I'm so excited. I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
It's been a long time coming. It absolutely has been.
Well, Jen, welcome to Living as You. Welcome to the podcast.
I'm so pumped. I am pumped because we've been talking about this since, what, July? And to be here, I'm so pumped. It's an honor. It truly is.
It was incredible getting to be on One Life Fully Lived, your podcast, a couple months ago, and here we are. I've got just so many great things I want to ask you about. So I would love to begin our conversation today by talking about the roots of where your desire to help people live their fullest life started. Tell me about the influence of your mom, as you allude to in your book, Aladdin Carpets, and how she shaped your vision of the world as you grew up.
So we read about, and I'm not religious. I keep telling people that, but I definitely grew up in the Christian religion. Went to church every Sunday, and there were good times. There were good moments and all of that, but I quickly came to know I'm not really religious. So when the way I read the Bible, the way I questioned the Bible, and even as I was getting confirmed, and I've been kicked out of a Bible reading classes, I've been kicked out of two or three Bible reading classes, because I always asked very profound questions. And the priests and, you know, the reverends would kind of push back on a child asking those types of deep questions. And I had to make sense of some of those stories because they were moving stories. But there were stories that were, I recognized even from small, were based on interpretation. So the reason I say this is because my mom was my savior. She really was. I'm telling you, I lived it with my mom. My mom immigrated to Canada and she left her two children behind in the Caribbean with my grandmother, and she didn't have a great, great relationship with her mother. She had a great relationship with her grandmother and her aunt, but she left us with her mother. And what she didn't really realize was how my grand would persecute me because of the color of my skin. It was darker, my sister was lighter. And, you know, and I suffered in those 2 years we were away from her. And I wrote her a letter telling her in childlike, if you ever see, my mom told me she did give it to me, and I have it somewhere. So I have to now search to try and find this letter. But at 15, my mom showed me this letter as being the reason why she ran and really expedited us coming back up to Canada with her. Because my letter said to her that it wasn't working out. And I was six years old, and it wasn't working out, and that she really needed to bring us with her. And it was said in a childlike, you know, a childlike thing, but and with childlike handwriting, printed handwriting, not cursive. And my mom picked up on that and immediately worked to get us with her. But the thing she did was she brought my grandmother. So I always tell this story because for me, it's funny now where my grandmother is telling us, oh, we're going with your mom. You know, she got a barrel. My mom sent a barrel down. And if you know the Caribbean immigration path, barrels are a huge thing. People away would send barrels, you know, to uplift their family and send them goods from across the waters. So my mom sent a barrel of shoes, clothes, and my grandmother put all the good, like all the clothes for my sister, all the shoes, and gave me my sister's, gave me like the old shoes and the clothes. So when we came up, I had on old shoes and my sister had on the new shoes. But the story I'm trying to say is when we got to the airport, I thought we were saying goodbye to my grandmother. And lo and behold, she was coming on the airline with us. And I cannot tell you the horror, like just the horror of that for me at that age. I was horrified. I remember in the plane looking up and thought, what kind of joke are you playing on me? Is this for real? And I think from my mom's point of view, this is what I later realized, from my mom's point of view, it was she needed to see for herself and she needed to correct. So she brought us up, we lived with her, but then she saw the treatment for herself and she came in like a force. You know, she was never rude because we are always taught to be respectful to our elders, our parents and things. So it's not like she was rude to my grandmother, but my mother came in like a force. And she stopped it. She separated us. She asked my grandmother to get her own place and she separated us. And that was my saving grace. And from that point on, my mother intervened. She corrected, she reshaped the messages my grandmother was given and she tried to give it purpose. And so as a young child, I got to actually contemplate many things at a much deeper level than I think normally afforded 6 years old, you know, 6 year old and 7 year old. And that shaped me. And then she created an environment of help. She created an environment of where she uplifted people. She helped in the immigration of others and she embraced, and our Christmases always had new people that didn't have, that just didn't have a place to go. And she would open her doors and she would have them make sure they weren't alone at Christmas. And she opened the doors from being, she didn't believe in color lines. She opened the doors for us to experience other cultures. At 15, she made sure we traveled. We weren't going to waste our summers just playing around. She wanted us to travel, see the world, integrate with different cultures. And from there, that's all the things that made me want to change, because I recognize if I could change, if I can get through this strife, I could help others get through the strife. And I wanted people to understand that suffering is learning, it's teaching, it's building who you are. at one point I was able to stand in the mirror and say, do you like who you are? And I loved who I was. And that's because of two people, my grandmother and my father. The hardest lessons they ever taught me turned me away from their thinking, turned me away from their lifestyle choices, and made me a better person. So I was happy with who I was. So I could no longer hate them or harbor any bad thoughts about them. I was actually thankful for them. But that's the answer. You know, all of these things had a purpose.
And when you look back now, I'm such a firm believer in, we can't always connect the dots. I think many times we will never connect the dots until we go out into the future, we look back.
Exactly.
So as you talk about your childhood and as you were raised, was there maybe a time or lesson that you did end up learning from your mom or even your dad as you talk about while you were growing up that now looking back, you're able to maybe connect the dots a little and you say, wow, my purpose, my mission right now, maybe it really stemmed from that lesson or that event that happened when I was younger.
Well, I think the greatest lesson, certainly that my father, that I came out of my father's thing recognizing, was to look at yourself as a temple, meaning that temples, you know, they have a tradition, they have ways to enter the temple, ways to leave the temple, ways to navigate through the temple. Temples are praised in some way. And if we look at ourselves as a temple, we treat ourselves in a very different way than if we just look at ourselves as just another dot in a society. And my dad taught me that because he was very promiscuous. He had a lot of women. He, you know, I've got half sisters, half brothers. It was crazy. And I, you know, to some degree, there was a resemblance in me with him. So I had a lot of people always saying, you're like your dad. And even as a child, I pushed back on that. Why would I be like my dad, right? But then I started looking at it more texturally, more temple-based. And I thought, you know what, there's good things and there's bad. So I'm now very clear on the good side of my dad and on the bad side of my dad. So my dad loved to drive. There was never an issue in jumping in a car and doing long distances. And I love to drive. So those are things that I got from my dad, right? And that's not a bad thing. It's a wonderful thing. But the things that weren't so good about him, some of his choices in life, are not things I would do. And they're not choices I would make. Because one of the other lessons that I later came to understand that people forget when they're young is they will get old. And the choices and the breadcrumbs that you leave in living and to that age is going to determine the quality of your end of life path. So my dad sits alone right now because he didn't leave good breadcrumbs. So I learned I want to leave good breadcrumbs. I want to make sure the branches of my tree are healthy and that every leaf that comes out is blessed in a very positive way. So I take that responsibility very, very serious.
You talk about in your book, there was a phenomenal quote you said that something like, I've come to accept that there are two things we can absolutely cannot control. Coming into this world and leaving it behind. The time in between these two events is all about our choices. And I think that really reflects what you just talked about. I look at life and see there's so much out of our control. We don't know when adversity is going to strike. We don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. I think it's really accelerated during this global pandemic. It's making us all realize life is about one day at a time, living it to the fullest, Living presently, and living right now. I wanted to really dive in, Jen, to the idea of these choices, but also the lens in which we view this world. That's something you talked about a lot in Aladdin Carpets, and how our experience of life is very much based on our perception of it. And the lens we have when we live it. Mm-hmm. How did you develop your lens in which you view the world? And what contributing factors have throughout your life allowed you to look at the world with the lens of let's go out and make a difference, as opposed to getting bogged down by, man, there's a lot of struggle and a lot of suffering in this world?
So I don't think that we control suffering, right? Meaning one day your life can be beautiful. You can think it's beautiful. And then something happens and all of a sudden you're struggling. So I don't think we can control those elements as much. I think we can make choices to help that along. But sometimes you just can't, like COVID, no one could control. It's how you get through the struggle that matters. So how do we create the strength of character, the strength of movement from a day-to-day basis to weather those storms? And we have to believe in something. And Aladdin Carpets is about believing. At the end of the day, it's about believing. We sit and we watch these movies, and trust me, I'm a one, I watch them all, Mulan, Lion King, all of them. We watch all of these, but all of them are lessons. All of them are speaking to how we should look at life. You know, in the Lion King, when Mufasa says to his son, it's the circle of life. That is a phenomenal statement. The conversation he had was phenomenal, but people look at it like just a story. They have a good time and they leave. I'm a reflective person. I reflect on every little nudge, every little message, every little pattern I sit and I reflect upon. So I made choices to do that. And I learned that from small. I had a lot to reflect upon. So a lot of times I would sit in a field by myself and pray and talk and question the Lord. And even though then I go on Sunday and the reverend say, tell you shouldn't be questioning the Lord. And I was like, why shouldn't I be questioning what I think is, if I'm not questioning, what am I doing? You know, because I questioned, I would say, well, this isn't why, like, how is this a great life? Like, how is this? Who at 8, 9 in all of this should be suffering? An 8-year-old should not be suffering. A 9-year-old is not suffering. But the thing is, because you can't control suffering and you can't control how you came in the world and who you came into the world to, but you can learn. You can learn because through the suffering is a teaching. And you can pray because I truly believe those good things get you brownie points. And all of a sudden, something opens up. You attract what you need. So when a child is born into, you know, wrong circumstances, by believing strongly in something, like I once had my eldest tell me, she said, I'm an atheist. I was like, what? I said, no, you're not. And she was like, what do you mean? What do you mean? Tell me. I said, it's impossible. And she goes, well, what do you mean it's impossible? I said, it's impossible for you to be an atheist. I said, so tell me, when you get hit with a downer in life, how are you going to get through it? She says, well, what do you mean? Well, you don't believe in anything. According to you, you don't believe in anything. So how are you going to get through that downer? And she didn't, like, she was like trying to break the logic. So I said, you got to believe in something. You got to believe in something. I don't know what that something is. I don't care if it's Buddha. I don't care if it's a tree. I don't care if it's I don't care what it is, but you got to believe in something to get through those downtimes. You know, we have to build those things and look at life much deeper than we do. We can't just exist. We can't just go through every day and just go from day to day and shrug our shoulders and say, you know, it'll come of thing. No, we have to be actively involved. And we have to build that.
And there was a great part of Aladdin Carpets in which you talked about there were two things that you believe people in life need to do to go out and, in your terms, go out and soar. The first one is having faith in something. And the second is having this, as you put it, an immovable belief in themselves. I love that because that is something I wanted to stress upon and get your thoughts on. Having some sort of faith in something, the universe, a God, something outside of yourself, something in control, that has to give you so much peace of mind when you're going through the challenges, and it gives your rational mind something to just hold on to. Because I think everybody has at least one time in their life, I know myself way more, when something hard happens, it's easy to say why. I think that's a question so many of us ask. Why am I going through this? Why is this happening? Why does suffering exist? We were at the dinner table the other night, Jen. My dad said something powerful, just about challenges in general that I'm never going to forget. When a challenge happens to you, you can look at it as if that challenge is happening to you, or it's happening
for you. Exactly.
And that little lens shift completely changes everything. Absolutely. I want to ask you if you could reflect back and share a story or time in your life when you made that lens shift from a challenging happening to you to now this challenge is happening for you. Is there a particular time that you made a shift like that? And maybe you can talk about the result of that.
I started to realize that, as I said, it was probably in my teens years that I realized that everything that had happened for a reason, and that I made the shift from why me, because I used to, as a young, like between, I know for sure, 7, 8, 9, 10, I sat in fields and I would ask, why me? I didn't understand what was going on. And my brain, because it's so logical, was trying to make sense of it. But in my teens, I had a shift and I started to realize, and that was where I started to appreciate, because I saw other teenagers. At that time, you see other teenagers with probably far more difficult problems than you had. And one of the things that I came to appreciate is the exterior look. So what I mean by that, in my teens, there's two things I learned. I learned the for me, and I learned don't be envious about anybody. Because in those days, people suffered in silence. So they would put up this beautiful facade. And I would, of course, you know, as I'm going to my different friends' places and hanging out and all of that, and then have to go back to what I considered my miserable, you were thinking their life was better than yours. But then slowly things started to bubble up that you realize their life is not better than yours. And in some situations, it was worse than yours. And I started to realize people put a facade on and they smile outside, but God knows what's going on behind closed doors. And so I stopped the why me, and I started to more appreciate the for me. And even then I created like a Students for Progress, in which I worked with kids coming from impoverished areas of Montreal. And they would come to our school because our school seemed to be like the dumping ground. And then they would push them. I noticed that guys were being pushed into the vocational and girls were being pushed. And I noticed just these things happening around you. So I created Students for Progress that would give a bit more options, would also push diversity messages. And five of us ended up getting awards and recognition when we left high school for that work. But that was really the first start. And I did plays and fashion shows. And I just really wanted to lift and embrace and create unity even at that age. And that was the good part. That was the good me that came out of the suffering. And I came to appreciate that. You know, I came to appreciate I was a bit unique. And it was okay to be unique because I always felt like the black sheep. And today I'm still, to this degree, so many times I'm an island of my own, but that's okay. I've come to appreciate it, right? So I don't see it negatively. So that's where I made the shift from the why me to the it's for me. And I came to appreciate who I was and I could. So I'll give you what is a really stark teenage experience that I had, or post-teenage. It was an experience from my grandmother. So one day I go to see my grandmother, and I walk in her house and I say, "Good afternoon, Gran." And my Gran's response was, "God, you're black and ugly." But my response was one of compassion. My response was not anger. My response was actually quite pleasant. I was like, "Okay, Gran, you might be having a bad day. I hope your day's good. It was that kind of jovial type of response, but that showed how much I had grown. So I couldn't, you know, it's a negative experience for sure, but it didn't affect me the way it affected the 7-year-old, the 8-year-old, the 9-year-old. I had grown. And there was a recent one, maybe a year ago, a year and a half, might even be less than that. Again, where it showed, I thought we had bridged this gap. I thought we had arrived at a really great place in our relationship. And she's in her 90s. Well, she's 99 now. So this must have happened when she was 98 or 97. And she started thinking people were taking stuff from her. I visit and she's asking me, have you seen this? And I'm like, no, I haven't seen. Why don't you ask my sister? Because she was there at the time that you're saying that you think this got taken. So why didn't you ask my sister? Oh, because your sister wouldn't do that. So I said, so you're saying me and my kids would steal from you, but my sister wouldn't? And this now I was, as I say, a year ago, I was 50. And I was like, oh my God. I said to her, oh my God, Gran, you still have this thinking? I really thought we had gone past this. And I got my sister on the phone and my sister's talking to her, you know, but it showed you that even after 30 years, she still has 40 years, she still has these thinking, whatever years it is. So I realized in that last one that, you know what? You just be you. You just do you. My grandmother is someone I would take care of if I have to, and I would do it lovingly and with the best of intentions, because I don't do things with a bad heart. I don't believe in it. But I was on my own 2 feet even when that happened. So I said to her, I'm not 9 years old. Mm-hmm. You can't impact me. The pity is you, not me. But you see, you have to be right in yourself. So when I say have an immovable belief in yourself, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about not allowing anybody to tell you who you are, what you stand for, what you will do, what dreams you should go after. I'm talking about standing firmly on your 2 feet and say, this is what I am going to do. And even if it does not work out the way you originally imagined it, you cannot tell me you didn't learn something. You cannot tell me you didn't grow. And you cannot tell me you didn't soar at some point. You just have to sit back, collect your thoughts, collect your experiences, your circumstances, pivot, reset, and go again. And anytime you go again, you're going at a higher altitude than you did when you first started and said, this is what I'm going after. So what you have to do is scope your space. This is what I will let in and this is what I won't. And if people took that stronger belief in themselves and ran with it, I think looking back, they would be amazed at what they achieved. They will be amazed at where they have gone. But few people are working and running after their dream. They're running after other people's dream. They're running after what they believe is obligations. They're running after what they believe is tradition. They're running, you know, it's not them. Every one of us was given a gift. Mine is motivating. Mine is making people feel darn good about themselves and appreciating even the things about themselves that they don't recognize. I see the good in people and I see the potential in people. That's my gift. What is yours? Go after your gift and stop going after what other people think you should be doing.
Brilliant. And that's the thing, Jen. If we realize that every single situation in life experience, it can only help us. It can only make our lives more richer. We can only learn from something. Okay, we set off with this goal in mind, X goal or whatever, and maybe we fall short of that goal. But in reality, we still learned X, Y, and Z from going after that. And so that's where exactly what you just were sharing. If we could get out of our own ways, and instead of looking and labeling things as good, bad, success, failure, saying,
every single day I have on this earth is an opportunity to learn, to grow, to share life, and to get better in one area.
Exactly.
So that I can make a greater impact on this earth. I think you are spot on. And something I think completely exhibits this, that I read about in Aladdin Carpets, that I want you to touch upon, is the G squared attitude. Grace and gratitude. Tell me about that.
Oh, I love the G squared attitude. I love the G squared attitude. That's the attitude we all have to get to. We all have the, you know, we all look and we go, oh, Dalai Lama, oh, Mother Teresa, oh, Nelson Mandela. Guess what? They all have grace and gratitude. What you are claiming and going woo woo hoo for is the grace they put forward. Beyond what Nelson Mandela suffered, he came out and he still was able to have kindness, to have a, you know, to really embellish the needs of others and just shrug off his suffering and go, oh, well. And look what he did. Look at where his carpet went. So the first thing is grace. Now, what is grace? We emit a certain frequency. It is recognizing your frequency and moving that forward. It's leaning in. And no matter what's going on around you, no matter what turmoil, it could be a riot. In there is this calm force that say, guys, hold on. Hold on, that's grace. Walking into a room and people kind of look and go, oh, there's something different about that person. That's grace, right? Some people are going to say it's confidence, but it's more than confidence. Confidence is just a little piece of it, but it's about you resonating your true heartbeat, your true beat. That's what grace is. And then the other thing is gratitude. My goodness, we should be grateful for everything, even the suffering in our life. We should be grateful for the struggles that we have. We should be grateful for everything in our life. You know, there's people that can live in a tent and be quite contented. How's that possible? It's better than being outside in the rain. It can still shelter you from rain, and you can still have some amazing, right, camaraderie and family gatherings in a tent. It does not need to be a 20,000 square foot house. That's grace and that's gratitude.
When we begin to compare ourselves to other people, it is so hard to be grateful. Yeah. It is so hard to be grateful because I think that's where our minds blow up these struggles. And it's easy to get so bogged down by the struggles of life when you compare yourself to other people. Everything is relative. And the way I like to think about it is, let's say you have $100. If you're always comparing yourself to millionaires, you're going to be miserable because you view that $100 as this is nothing.
Yeah.
But man, if you remember that there were people making living on less than a dollar a day in this world to provide for their entire family, man, that $100 bill looks like you just won the lottery. How can we better remember that it's about keeping things in perspective? That if we're going to have this grace and this gratitude, we have to remember that everything, truly everything, is relative. Mm-hmm. And what I like to say is put the blinders on. Comparison, all it does, you might think, oh, if I had that $100 bill, it'd be good for me to compare myself to people with $1. Mm-hmm. But in reality, I view comparison as the thing that kind of takes us away from who we're called to be on this earth. The more we are aware of other people's circumstances, but don't compare to the level of making us feel a certain way, I think that's where, as you put it, that's the fuel for us to launch off in that rocket and go.
Yeah, exactly. You cannot, if you're truly working from a G squared or G to the power of two attitude, you are not comparing yourself to anybody. You are not looking at what, you know, the Joneses have down the street versus what you have. You are moving to your own beat. And nobody is happier when they're moving to their own tune. It, to me, it's like, you know, I I remember when goth came in, and one of the girls I knew, she turned goth. But you know what? People look at her, oh, she looks weird. But she was the happiest she has ever been because she was moving to her own beat. She didn't ask anybody, like it, don't like it. Kudos to whoever is doing that. Resonate your own beat. Live it, walk it, speak it, dress it. That is you. You know, I walk down the street, like sometimes I walk down the street and I'll see somebody that looks amazing. I have no problem turning to them going, you wear that well, keep up going, because they're doing their thing. And they feel like $1 million just by me saying that, because somebody recognized. You are not doing a G-square attitude if you are comparing yourself. So if you see somebody wearing tights and you run out and buy tights, are you comfortable in tights? Move to your own beat. That's what it's all about. And it's in every aspect of your life. And I know you and I, Patrick, we've talked where I said I cut off cable, fax, all these types of things. I moved away. I shut it down. People thought I was crazy. They were like, what are you doing? Taking off cable? No, I don't need it. It's noise. My beat is I need peace and quiet. I don't need drama. I don't need noise. I don't want this. I want it on demand. I pick and choose what I listen to, all these types of things. So I crafted my life that way. Best thing I ever did for me. I'm saying, try it. If it works for you, great. But that's my beat, because I have a recluse side. I like to come and do these types of interpersonal things. And then I'm fine by myself. I'm good. So that's my own beat. What's yours? Again, you know, I look at the audience, I say, what's yours? Figure it out and stop trying to be with things that don't make you, they don't take you any further. They don't make you feel good. You know, I was recently having a conversation with a girl, and we were in a program, and we went into breakout room, and she was saying, well, I'm trying to do that, but you know, I go with my friends, and I leave them and they make me feel bad. Well, I then, you know, and I'm listening, and then she's like, Jen, what do you think? And I'm like, I do not get into those situations because I don't have people in my circle that I have a conversation with and they make me feel bad. I said, I do not have that type of situation. If people are making me feel like, you know, crap when I leave them, I need to be away from them. So I do not. I say I have no problem letting people go who are not serving me in a positive way. My whole REM is about positivity. And if somebody brings in negativity, I'm sorry, they have to go. That does not mean I won't meet them in the mall and I will pass them. I will say, good evening. Hello, how are you? I'll be kind because I lead with love. They're not in my circle. They're not in my scope. You really need to look at those people that are making you feel drained and down.
No, Jen, the idea of you are the air traffic controller in your life. You reference that multiple times in the book. And I love that because I think on one hand, the idea of control, we think many times our human brain tells us, oh, we're in control of our life. But as we talked about earlier, I like to view the world as there's so much out of our control, but I think the idea of controlling life and the challenges versus you are the air traffic controller. You are in the driver's seat for your life. Those are two different things. One is all about, oh, I want to sit in that ball and see how I can completely control, make sure nothing negative happens. And the other one is taking charge. Being powerful, saying, this is me, I'm gonna live me. Can you touch upon that idea of being the air traffic controller and how that is ultimately so important to going out with that confidence and that courage and the G-squared attitude?
Because when you're in the driver's seat, right, whether it's in the cockpit or in a car, there's certain decisions you have to make and certain things you got to, you know, we get so used, like a car, after a while, when you first start out, you realize how difficult. After a couple of years, you're so used to it, you're not really thinking anymore. But there's actually a lot of decision points in driving a car. And we need to look at our lives that way. Life, you come into this world, you have no choice in that. And you had no choice in the circumstances with which you came in. Or you know that it's going to end with you leaving this world. And everybody, and that's why I love healthcare, because it's one of those stop points that nobody can avoid. So you know you're going to end up there. Everything in between is choice. And the most that can happen is you make the choices that are presented to you. So here's where life goes off, because I don't believe that necessarily we are in full control. I truly believe, remember I talked about the genie in you. I believe that inner genie is the one helping me and leading me and giving me all the different connection points and the hints. And unless you are focused on you, unless you have grown yourself to such a capacity that you can hear that genie talking to you, you can now start to see the patterns it's showing you. It's answering every one of your questions. It's giving you what your dream should be. It's giving you your purpose. It's telling you when you're on the purpose. But if you're not in tune, guess what? You miss all those things. And the thing that I find with suffering, if you don't learn the lesson, it spins back around again. So I'm always telling people, please learn the lesson. You know, when I say control and be and in the drivers, it's again, looking and getting yourself to the point that you need to be to hear your own beats, to look at the opportunities that have been laid there, because they're usually laid, and to do all the things to make the right choices. And if you make the wrong choice, you'll spin and you'll spin and you'll spin. So that's what I mean by that.
I love that. Jen, what is the noblest thing that a person could devote their life to?
For me, it's helping others grow. It's helping others. And I look to people like Gandhi and Mother Teresa for those types of. Here's Mother Teresa. She didn't go after riches. She just served. And some people say, well, she was a nun. That's what she's supposed to do. No, she was a human first. Yeah, a nun was just a title. I think helping people with a good heart. I know there's a lot of crap out there. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to paint this stellar picture. We know we are cautious because there's a lot of scams. There's a lot of stuff. But if you're going to do something, I always tell my kids, never do anything with a bad heart. One of my daughters, her friend asked her for money. She was like, should I lend the money? I said, I'm not going to tell you not to lend the money. I'm going to tell you if you do it with a good heart. Don't expect nothing back in return. You set whatever arrangements you want, but if it doesn't turn out that they pay you back, you don't have a bad mind because you did it with a good heart. You told them, you know, whatever the repayment conditions are, but if they don't do it, that's okay. But you know, don't do it with a bad heart. That's the only advice I gave her. But you make whatever decision, but make sure you do it with a good heart. Everything else will fall into place.
And I always think when we help others, when we serve others, when we give of ourselves, does that tap into some of the greatest joy each of us has ever experienced in this world? Yes. Of course, you have to love yourself and you have to show yourself love and self-compassion first before you have to put on your mask before you can help someone else.
Absolutely.
But when you do that, and you make your life about, and whatever it is, healthcare, motivational speaking, being an author, whatever, business, anything, you can find a way to make it about other people. I firmly believe that. But it takes that commitment, it's a choice, and it's that attitude, the G-squared attitude.
Yeah.
If there was one take-home message that you wanted your readers to take away after reading Aladdin Carpets, or even some of the people listening who haven't had the chance yet to read your incredible book, what would it be?
I want everybody to believe in themselves, recognize that we are all born with a gift. Got to find what that gift is. Many of us have lost sight of what that gift is, but I know, you know, nobody's going to convince me differently. We all have a gift. Believe in it. Believe in yourself and live your life fully. Go after your best life. Purpose puts a shine on you. Your purpose puts a glow on you. Your purpose resonates from you. Your purpose touches and attracts. And I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's cleaning the streets. I don't care if it's painting a picture on a wall. I don't care what it is. If you're doing what your true purposes, you will light, it lights you up. And that's what I want people to understand from Aladdin Carpe. I'm not preaching. A lot of people have told me what they love about the book is like a casual kind of conversation that makes you think along each line. So that's all I want to do, is to lay the seeds of you feeling your worth and that you feel you can be better than what you are today and go after that. That's what I want everybody to walk away with.
I love it. Well, Jen, that was my experience reading Aladdin Carpe. It was phenomenal. It got me to start thinking about my own life in a deeper manner. And so laying the seeds, planting the seeds, laying the foundation, that's exactly what you're doing. Thank you so much. It's been a joy to have you on Living as You. What a pleasure. Keep sharing so much motivation, light, love through books and your podcasts. One life fully lived in everything you're doing.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Love you all. It's been an honor.
Our music today was created by current freelance producer and editor, Bruno Jomedes Duvalde. You can find more of Bruno's music at brunohd.com or check out his latest work on Spotify. This week's unsung hero is entrepreneur and film producer Sean Wolfington. Creator of 6 tech companies and 5 major motion pictures, Sean is absolutely dedicated to living a life of following one's intuition. This week, Sean played a major role in making an Inspiring Children Foundation retreat incredibly valuable to over 20 young adults. Thank you, Sean, for taking the time to share stories, wisdom, and personal insights with me on letting go of thoughts and following the whispers of God. I'm very grateful for your mentorship and inspiration. And until we meet again, don't forget to keep living as you.